Mick Carlin is a seventh grade English teacher in Barnstable and the author of young adult novels that combine fiction with his love of jazz. His books have been used in schools across the country to introduce children to the great jazz musicians Duke Ellington and Louis Armstrong. Mick Carlin's latest book, Girl Singer, focuses on Count Basie and his band, but this time the story is told from a female perspective. Mick Carlin, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Your previous books have been geared for young adults and featured young male protagonists, but as I read Girl Singer, it became clear this book is not for kids. Why did you decide to write for an older audience, and where did the idea of a female protagonist come from?
It came from my editor at Leapfrog Press, to tell you the truth. My earlier books have been are being used in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade classrooms, and I was asked to aim this time for 11th or 12th graders. Maybe I aimed a little too high because it's being published as an adult novel, but one that can be used with 11th and 12th graders. And I was also asked by my editor, think about a female protagonist this time. And I have two daughters. My daughter Hannah is 19. She's a student at Suffolk University in Boston. My daughter Sarah is a junior, 16, at Barnstable High. So I know a little bit about the ladies. So I figured I could hopefully create a believable female protagonist. But my daughters did read various stages of the manuscript, and they gave me priceless advice. You know, Dad, a girl would never say this. Dad, a girl would never do this. Take this out right now. And I listened to them.
Right. Yeah. And I feel as though she was a very believable character. Tell us more about that character, Avery Hall.
She's known trouble in her life. She's had a mother who, during her childhood, paid more attention to her various boyfriends than to Avery. But Avery grew up with a good moral sense. She grew up rather wary of men after seeing what her mother's gone through. And she's basically grown up with a tough spirit. She's a survivor.
Yeah, you know, in the story, she takes the place of Billie Holiday in the Count Basie band, and those are really big shoes to fill. But that doesn't seem to intimidate her in the least. She's very determined and very confident.
And I think inside she knows that she has the gift. She knows that if she just gives it a try, boom, she'll be able to do it. I get sad sometimes in the world thinking of all the people at home watching athletes, watching musicians, watching actors and artists, and they too could have had that talent. They do have that talent within them that no one ever brought it out.
I remember in one of your previous books, one of the young male protagonists has a gift. I think it's maybe playing the trumpet, but
yes.
he suffers from stage fright.
Crippling stage fright.
And it's through, eventually he gets over it.
Yep.
He is able to work through that, but yeah, people come to the world with different gifts and abilities.
Well, because of this book, I now give speeches at a lot of places. And one of my first was at the ALA, the American Library Association's convention in Dallas back around 2012. And I had to give a speech to about 2,000 librarians. And I was nervous, but I just remembered the advice I give to my students: speak loudly, make eye contact, and go for it. And sometimes in this life, you just have to go for it.
You said earlier that your books are being used in various schools across the country in 6th and 7th graders. What do you hear back from students about these novels?
Well, the reason I write these books is to open up the world of jazz to these students. Because in my life, jazz has given me nothing but joy, and it's going to until the day I leave the planet. And, you know, it's like this great gift that Americans have in their backyard buried, but very few Americans these days, sadly, are taking the time to dig it up. So the letters I get, and I receive them on almost a weekly basis from readers, they say different things. You know, the kids tell me about their lives, and I know kids. I've been a public school teacher for 32 years, but then it all boils down to the same thing. After reading your book, I'm now listening to Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, jazz in general, and hopefully after this book, Count Basie.
Right. Since Avery Hall is a fictional character, we don't have a recording of her, but we do have Swing Brothers Swing, a 1937 recording of Billie Holiday and Count Basie, recorded live at the Savoy. Before we hear it, can you tell us anything about this?
Wonderful, wonderful recording. Billie recorded it in the studio, but there's also air check recordings of her playing it live. And I just decided to have it as the first song that Avery sings with the Basie band at the Savoy. It's her debut song, and she nails it.
Let's hear it.
Deep rhythm captivates me. Hot rhythm stimulates me. Can't help but swing it, boy. Swing it, brother, swing. Diddle daddle, stop this foolish prattle. stop and send me, let me go to town. Stop this diddle-daddle and this foolish prattle. Come on, kill me, Joe. Swing it, brother, swing. Deep rhythm captivates me. Hot rhythm stimulates me. Can't help but swing it, boy. Swing it, brother, swing.
Avery joins Count Basie on the road and travels for the first time in her life. One might think that being the only woman traveling with a band of men would present difficulties, but it's the opposite. She's not about to fulfill anyone's stereotypes about women, and in turn, her bandmates treat her like a sister.
Yeah, they did with Billie Holiday, too. Billie had a tough exterior. She had had a rotten childhood, but she was a very warm, generous person. And this is coming both from reading and knowing several older gentlemen who knew Billie well. So the Basie band, some of these bands were notorious for being prima donnas, for not getting along. The Basie band were truly a group of brothers who stuck by each other. They were lifelong friends, and they did look out for the female singers who performed with them.
Girl Singer is set in the late 1930s and early 1940s as events leading to World War II begin to unfold. There's a scene when Count Basie and his band are playing at a military base in the South, and the commander decides that only the white servicemen will be allowed into the performance, which rankles the band. And Avery, tell us what happens next.
What happens next is they begin performing. They were thinking of walking out, but then the commanding officer said, wouldn't that make a great headline? Basie band refuses to play for soldiers. And there were, on these military bases, plenty of African-American soldiers, but they weren't allowed in to hear these shows. The military wasn't yet integrated. So they begin to play, and then Avery notices that the military police are escorting in some prisoners in, gray garb. And they don't look Italian to her, and they certainly don't look Japanese. And it dawns on her, we're playing right now to Nazis. We're not allowed to play to our own soldiers, soldiers of color, but we're playing to Nazis. And she basically slams down the microphone and leads the band off the stage. And these things actually happened.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if that was based on I'm sure it did happen, or if it had, if you had known about this. And that takes a lot of guts, because I remember there's a moment when she thinks, uh-oh, what's the rest of the band going to think of this? And they all back her up.
Oh, yeah. And then Basie says to the commanding officer, well, publish it in the newspaper. It'll say Basie band refuses to play for Nazis. That's priceless publicity, you sad turkey. And they leave. This story actually happened, and it happened to Lena Horne. And Lena Horne, in around 1944-45, she led a walkout when she realized she was performing for Nazis.
Yeah. Eventually, Avery decides she's had enough time on the road, and around 1945, she leaves the Count Basie band and returns to Greenwich Village. In the lobby of her building, she meets a man with a German accent, and based on this, she makes assumptions about who he is and what he might represent.
Yeah, to her, German accent equals Nazi, and she gives him attitude, and then he basically says, hey, you of all people, an African-American lady, should know not to be bigoted. I'm not a Nazi. I'm Jewish, actually, and I suffered at Hitler's hands. And then a friendship begins from there.
Carl and Avery, quickly strike up this friendship. In the 1940s, it wasn't common for a black woman to be seen out with a white man. But Avery's not deterred by cultural norms, and her relationship with Carl becomes very important to her.
Oh, yeah, they actually fall in love. And I've based the character of Carl Flosch on my dear, dear friend Heinz Prager, who was a Holocaust survivor and a Cape Codder. He moved here in 1978. I taught a journalism class at Barnstable High for 19 years, and in the summer and fall of 1987, I was getting very distressed at all the SWAT stickers that were being drawn on some of the synagogues in the suburbs of Boston. So I just put out the word, are there any Holocaust survivors living on the Cape? It would be wonderful if one of these survivors could speak to my students, and I found out that a gentleman named Heinz Prager was living in Marston's Mills. And I'll never forget the evening I called him. I introduced myself. I said, would you like to talk to my two journalism classes? And he said, in a voice I came to know very well, he said, speaking of these things is very painful for me. And then I thought, well, that's it. That's a no. But then he said, but I feel it's important that young people know the Holocaust happened and that it happened to real people. I'll be in. He spoke to my two classes. High school students are notoriously difficult to impress. You know, just ask me. I'll tell you. They gave him standing O's. The girls wanted to hug him. I asked him, as I was helping him deliver his photos and documents back to his car, can I take you out to dinner tonight to pay you back? So we decided to meet at the Daniel Webster Inn. At the end of the meal, he grabbed the check before I could, so I'm not going to wrestle a 76-year-old gentleman in public. So I said, okay, buddy, next week I'm taking you out to dinner. And then it became twice-a-week dinners, and then it became one of the deepest friendships of my life. Heinz Prager was like a third grandfather to me. I'll never forget when I told him, Heinz, you're going to sit with my family at the family table at my wedding reception. The dear man burst into tears because he had lost both of his parents in the Holocaust. His wife had lived long enough to live on the Cape, but she had died of cancer, and their only son died a tragic death at 33. So my family kind of became his family. He was also a master photographer, and 2 days before he died, he gave me his beautiful photographs and documents of pre-Holocaust era Germany and Shanghai, China, where he lived. And just last June, I decided to donate all of his photos and documents to the National Holocaust Museum in Washington. But selfishly, I kept two of Heinz's Shanghai photos. They were wedding gifts that he gave to my wife and I. And those two photos are in Girl Singer.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about those photographs. Why those in particular? Is it because they have significant personal meaning? Because they were gifts that you included those? Or what?
Exactly. Plus, yeah, they're just beautiful photos. Until I met Heinz, I never realized over 20,000 Jewish refugees made their way to Shanghai, China. It was what was called an international or open city. People could enter without a passport, without a visa, hence the Jewish refugees going there. And Heinz said life was hard in Shanghai, but the Jewish people, as far as he was concerned, didn't experience that much prejudice. They were allowed to live and even thrive. So those two photos, because my character, Carl, he makes his way to Shanghai too, I thought they'd be perfect for the novel.
Yeah, that is, it's a heartbreaking story that Carl shares with Avery, and you realize they're hundreds of thousands of people with similar stories.
Yep.
It really is. The characters in your books, including this latest, Girl Singer, they often deal with great personal tragedy. What are the reasons you choose to have your characters carry such burdens?
This life is hard, and we're all good actors, and everyone you bump into on the street has gone through their own personal tragedies, or they're about to confront their own personal tragedies. You know, one can come at you, you know, within a day and your life has changed. And it's important in this world to be resilient, to be tough, to realize that you're probably only here once on this planet, so make it the best ride you can. So that inner toughness and that ability to overcome tough times, I admire it when I encounter it in real life people. So I think maybe that's why I give it to my characters.
Mm-hmm. I know Girl Singer just came out, but is there another idea of a book percolating around in your brain?
Well, right now I'm thinking of a sequel to Riding on Duke's Train, with Danny, the protagonist, being maybe 2 or 3 years older. In that case, I could put in the great Ben Webster, who had joined the Ellington Band at that point, and Billy Strayhorn. Billy Strayhorn is one of our nation's great composers. When he joined the Ellington Orchestra in 1939, it was like, you know, Henry Aaron joining Willie Mays in an outfield. And Billy Strayhorn, number one, did have to fight the battle as an African-American, but he was also openly gay. And he was thoroughly accepted by the Ellington men, all of whom were, you know, quite enthusiastic heterosexuals. But they opened him with loving arms, which shows how worldly these men were. And Billy Strayhorn, the more you delve into his life, he was a peaceful warrior fighting prejudice on two fronts.
Yeah, and I just remember from that, from your previous book, that Duke Ellington, it's hard to have imagine that he could work with another composer because he was constantly composing, right?
And, yes. You know,
he would just stop what he was doing sometimes just to let the music out.
But it's almost like Strayhorn and Ellington at times shared one brain. They'd be on phones from other parts of the world composing a piece together. And some people, now I can tell the difference, but they say a lot of people can't tell the difference between Strayhorn's piano style and Duke's. It takes a bit of listening to tell them apart, but they were each other's alter ego, and they deeply loved each other.
Sounds like a great book. We hope you do it.
Oh, thank you very much. I do too.
When we had you on the program last, you were playing jazz tunes for your students on Fridays. Are you still doing that?
Yeah, I'm still doing it. This Friday, I'm thinking of playing some Louis Armstrong. My seventh grade students right now, and a lovely bunch of kids, we're reading Mildred D. Taylor's novel, Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, which is about an African-American family in Mississippi in the early 30s. And just the other day, I played them Billie Holiday's recording of Strange Fruit.
Have you seen a change in how your students respond to the music over the three decades you've been doing this?
Kids, whether they know it or not, are open-minded. And all you have to do is expose them to the music. And the first time they hear it, it is a little alien to them. What I hear a lot is, it sounds like an old cartoon, because those old 30s cartoons did use jazz. But if they hear it more than once, they begin, most of them, to really enjoy it. And then I get kids asking me, what should I download? They used to ask, what album or CD should I buy? Now they ask me, what should I download? And I'm all too willing to tell them what they should put into their iPhones.
And once you know the stories of the musicians or the composers behind the music, it does make it all that much more meaningful and interesting.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, that's the thing. Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, I could go on and on with the names, Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, they were our nation's Mozart, our nation's Beethoven and Bach, and they're considered as such in Europe. But when you combine that with the fact that they were treated like second, even third class citizens in their own nation, but they rose above it with dignity and with artistic brilliance, you just kind of stand in awe of these people.
Mick Carlin's latest book is Girl Singer. We'll have a link to information about all of his books at our website, capeandislands.org. We're going to go out on Count Basie and his orchestra performing Blue and Sentimental. Is there anything you want to tell us about this tune before we go?
Listen closely to this. This is the great Herschel Evans on tenor sax. He and Lester Young were co-tenor players. He died very young. He hadn't even reached his 30th birthday. Listen to him. Herschel played like an angel.
Mick Carlin, thanks so much for coming in. I'm Amy Vince in for Mindy Todd.